All right, 3, 2, 1.
Those people told you for days in advance that if the university sought to go ahead with that construction, they were going to physically destroy the university.
Why did you negotiate many times?
Negotiate? What is to negotiate? What is?
University is a public institution.
That's right. But the university,
its own community, and for the community of Berkeley that live around it.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
I'm sick and tired of the argument about whether some effort to enforce law and order is going to escalate anything at all. Plain truth of the matter is this has to stop, and it has to stop like the day before yesterday.
I would like to propose that the issue is that on the campuses, you who are adults, you who are entrusted with those young people and their guidance, have a responsibility to make it plain to them from the very beginning that you yourselves do not tolerate the kind of conduct that has led to the burning of Wheeler Hall, that has led to two murders on the campus of UCLA.
You created an atmosphere on the campus where no one wants to listen. No,
you are a liar.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's the voice of President Ronald Reagan, and he was pretty mad after the riots that happened on campuses in the 1960s and 70s. He became president in 1980. It was still, things were still happening, and you heard his passion. You heard he was a law and order guy, and he put down the rebellion. He did. And that's why so many of us admire him. So now we have all kinds of things happening across this country out of control. We have the students, as Ronald Reagan just said, believing that they could do whatever, if they could just choose whatever laws or regulations they followed, they could create chaos. They could disrupt school, and no one stopped them. And so when you don't stop them, they just get worse. As a matter of fact, let me just give you a little rundown of what's happening across the campuses. Today, actually, we're going to talk to a former member of Antifa, who's involved, has a lot of thoughts about what's happening and a lot of great suggestions. It's a really wonderful discussion. You'll hear how he came out and what he's doing now. It's pretty interesting, so I hope you'll stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios, by the way, on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, as I'm talking to you now, just in the last night, in the present tense for me now, hundreds of helmeted police stormed a central plaza of the University of California at Los Angeles, and to dismantle a pro-Palestinian protest camp attacked the previous night by pro-Israel activists. Now, the story that this tells is that the pro-America forces, I'll call them, the anti-pro-Hamas Palestinian supporters, got into a fight, and man, it got really vicious. But my understanding is the police were nowhere to be found. They just actually ran. They got out of there. So this happened. Took place over the course of many hours. And finally, that particular night, just recently, the police finally, with a full capability, went in and dismantled that camp and got rid of them. That's the UCLA. So that's what's happened the most recently as of this recording. But of course, there are protests on campuses across the country, dozens of schools. And some of them are, of course, the Ivy Leagues. Columbia is the one most notable we've all been watching in New York City. So the College of New York, even Mayor Eric Adams is getting a little squeamish about that, and you'll hear a clip showing his squeamishness in just a few minutes. So it's happening in UCLA, in New York. It's happening in Dartmouth University. It's happening at the University of Georgia. Let me just give you an idea of what that sounds like.
Shame, 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 shame.
Let them go!
Let them go!
Get off them! Get off them! Get off of her!
Hey, stop that!
Let them go!
All right, so you're hearing, that's what happened at the University of Georgia, and they were yelling. We have the privilege of hearing their audio, the pro-Hamas people, and the police are arresting these protesters. So they put that little rebellion down pretty quickly in due order. Also now, this was breaking as I went on the air here. New York University dorms are in emergency lockdown after hundreds of Hamas supporters gathered outside of the dorms screaming, "Israel is going to die." All right, so that's how bad it is. University of North Carolina, if you want some good news, here's something that happened. The Hamas, pro-Hamas group pulled down the American flag and put up the Palestinian flag. So guess what happened? A group of fraternity brothers were so upset that they went over and pulled down the Palestinian flag and put up the American flag. There's some great pictures of that, and there's some sort of funny commentary about it. Fraternity brothers are pelted by anti-Israel protesters at UNC Chapel Hill while protecting the United States flag as it is rehoisted following its removal by protesters. And Max Meyer, who reported this, says, "Well done, gentlemen." And then he said, he describes these guys. He said, "The Star-Spangled Banner's top soldier has a Zoomer perm and a polo shirt." And then he says, "God, I love this country. This dude is awesome." Okay, so now Northwestern University, one last university I'll mention, they completely caved to the protesters just a few days ago. Northwestern University's administration negotiated with the encampment organizers and has announced a litany of concessions. The list includes full-ride scholarships for Palestinian students and positions for Palestinian faculty. So there you go. That's the way different groups are responding. Where we're going to talk with Gabriel Nadalis in just a second, and he's going to tell us his opinion as a former member of Antifa. One of the things that students are not considering, and I'm not talking about Palestinians because I think they're pretty blinded. In fact, a poll said that in asking Palestinians if they support the October 7th massacre, of those who watched the videos, are you ready? 81% were fine with Hamas's behavior on October the 7th. But I think that a lot of the students don't really know what happened, because what is true is that Hamas and most people in Gaza don't respect life. We're not like that here in America. This is a clash that cannot be mediated. There's no center ground when it comes to thinking life is precious. Which brings me to the way that we express it, at least in one area, and that is the life of unborn babies. Preborn this past year has saved 64,177 babies. They've served 79,213 abortion-minded women. They have had, because they are a Christian ministry, 10,319 commitments to Christ. 91 ultrasound machines have been placed. And on it goes. And you know what? They could not do that without you. So let me just tell you, if you haven't given to Preborn yet, they provide ultrasounds to women who are in, as they say, a crisis pregnancy, unwanted pregnancy, an inconvenient pregnancy. You can go to preborn.com/Sandy. $28 pays to provide one ultrasound to one woman and saves, God willing, one baby. And so go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. You know, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. You can listen on any podcast platform. AFR.net is our home base, but you can listen anywhere. You can also go to sandyrios.com and listen to the show pretty easily there if you're not accustomed to finding podcasts. So I think that about does it. Now, stay tuned, because this is a pretty incredible interview with a former member of Antifa regarding all these protests across the country on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
There are people that we have been watching in organizations that are not part of the campus. We've been very clear. They're individuals and organizations that are not students. We're seeing a shift in tactics that are being used, destruction of property, destruction of cameras. We know they are outside individuals that have been influencing this issue.
Yeah, I would think so. That's Mayor Eric Adams of New York City. You know, the open borders, sanctuary city, mayor of New York City now also getting upset. Why is he getting upset? Well, I'll give you a couple of examples. At Columbia University, they have discovered, this is a New York Times article, among the throng of Columbia University student protesters gathered outside Hamilton Hall on campus early Tuesday morning was a gray-haired woman in her 60s. In a video captured by the New York Times, the protesters can be seen trying to push their way through the building as the woman, decades older than the crowd, pleads with two young counter-protesters trying to block them from barricading the occupied building. "This is ridiculous," the woman says, as the men stand with their backs against the doors. Well, there's more to say about her, but she's a professional organizer, agitator, well known to the New York police. Who is this woman? I don't know. We'll talk about it in a bit. But I want to also say at the University of South Florida, we know now that a former terrorist who has served 57 months in prison in South Florida, I remember this happened when Islam and Islamism and their attacks were big in the news after the 9/11 attack. Sami Alarian was a professor at South Florida, and he was arrested for his terrorist activities. He spoke to the crowd. The Palestinian pro-Hamas supporters in University of South Florida just a few days ago and bragged that his wife was present in that crowd. Okay, so these are just a little snippet of who else has joined these protests besides these impassioned students that some would attribute pure motives to. It's not that simple. This morning, Gabriel Nadalis joins us. Gabriel is interesting past. Gabriel was part of Antifa. He's a former member of that group, but now he had something called Our America. He's the national director, and he believes in police cracking down. He believes in free speech. He's become a U.S. citizen, and he's joined us this morning to talk about what his perspective is on what's happening with these protests. Gabriel, thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
All right. I have to ask you about yourself a little bit. You know that. I don't know where you're from, Gabriel. Where's your home country?
I was born in Mexico City, right outside Mexico City in 94. So, yeah, I came to America when I was 8 years old in 2002.
Okay. What drew you? You come from Mexico, and we always hear that people from Mexico are looking for, you know, economic opportunities, and many of us know it. We have made friends. We see the hard work ethic, and the Mexican people, for the most part, are greatly appreciated when they come here legally. But so I don't know what your upbringing was, but what in the world drew you to Antifa?
So it's interesting because, you know, when I first came to this country, I was actually very happy to be in America. I mean, gosh, like the neighborhoods in America are just, even like the bad ones, are nothing compared to like Mexico. There's actually a movie called Elysium. It's post-apocalyptic Los Angeles. It's set in. Well, they actually had to go to Mexico to film those scenes of like a post-apocalyptic Los Angeles.
Oh, like, wow.
Actually, right outside where my mom is from and where I grew up, Nezahualcóyotl. That's where those films were filmed. So, give you an example of exactly just how bad it can be out there. But, you know, I came to this country. I really, really liked it. But I can tell you that I was part of the California public education system. I had a lot of different teachers who told me that I needed to be, had my voice heard, we needed to be involved. So that's how I became an activist. But then there was also many voices that also told me that that America was in a good place, that, you know, it was a sin or to be Christian or to believe in God. Because I remember there was this a biology teacher who would yell at the top of his lungs time and time again. And one time he said that he can't believe how people are so stupid for believing in God. And, of course, his children aren't stupid because he's raising them to be atheists. And, you know, these are the kinds of people who, you know, they spend – I would spend 6-7 hours with them every day, you know, in school. And how can you not be like a far left? Leftist when you experience those types of people. I think it's so rare to have conservative or libertarian students who come out of public education.
Yeah.
That said, well, I mean,
well, to hang on, let me interrupt. Let me interrupt you just for a second. I was just thinking about your mother, who probably thought she was sending her son off to get a great education in America, and how you have really painted a vivid picture of what I know, and most Americans by now actually understand, that our education system is so polluted and poisoned, and especially universities. But I interrupted the narrative. So you are turned. I do want to ask you, La Raza, was that part of your, did you know that name, that the title of that organization?
La Raza?
Yeah, La Raza.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with them. I'm very familiar with them. I did not have any connections there, but I am familiar with them. Another connected group is Mecha, if you've ever heard of them. I forget what Mecha stands for. It's like, it's in Spanish, movement for students. For Aztlan, I forget exactly what it stands for, but it is a far left group that, it's funny because they're present to this day on college campuses, and they pretend that they're a Mexican cultural club. But if you look at their charter, they're a secessionist group. They believe that California, basically the Southwest, should secede from America to create its own country because it was stolen land. And, you know, it's a very extremist group. So yeah, La Raza is similar to them.
Well, you know, it sounds so much like La Raza. That's the group that I was familiar with when I was, because they wanted to take back California and parts of Texas. Really radical leftists, just as you described. I just wanted to kind of lay the groundwork a little bit more. This has been going on for a long time, and you grew up in the midst of that in California. Okay, so then what drew you to Antifa? Why Antifa? You could do other things, you know.
You know, I always talk about my dad. My dad is a great and wonderful person, but one of the things is that he's very much a little bit too passionate. He's always about helping people and to the point that he makes not the greatest decisions for himself because he's out there helping somebody. So as a young kid, I always wanted to be like him, always wanted to help people. But one of the things that happens is that's really why I became an activist, because I wanted to help people. But at the same time, when you're an activist, you do a lot, and it often feels like it's all for nothing. You keep passing flyers, you keep marching, you keep attending these rallies, and then you feel like nothing is ever changing. So after a few years of doing this, which I should note, I started my activism in 2012. After a few years of doing this and feeling like I was getting nowhere, I started getting tired, and I decided that I really needed to do more to really make change. Now, there was an Antifa rally that was happening in 2011, and I decided to attend just without really knowing too much about it. I knew about Antifa. I dressed in all black, but I just wanted to be part of this. And that's how I joined the anti-fascist movement. It was a slow progression from, you know, just a regular left-wing kid to this extreme left that I found myself in.
You know, your story, I want to hear, of course, the rest of your story. I just want to say, David Horowitz, who's been a friend of mine for years, Freedom Center David Horowitz, he was a member of the radical left in the 60s, and he was really good friends with many of the Black Panthers and others in the movement. And at one time, the Black Panthers killed a friend of his, and he was deeply radical and left. He was so, that affected him so much, that's how he came out of that movement and then became one of the leading conservatives in the United States. It's just a kind of a parallel story. But I do want to know then, Gabriel, we know that Antifa is violent, and it's creepy to those of us on the outside. They remind us, you know, of some of the Nazi groups. We don't have a good impression. So I'm just wondering, you're on the inside and you're finally doing something, because they do move through violence and intimidation. Was there something that happened that caused you to just say, I don't belong here anymore?
So there's a couple of things that really made me kind of turn around, if you will. One of them is one specific event, and then the other one is more of a long transition, because it was never really an event, like one specific event that made me realize, oh, I don't believe in this anymore. I'm leaving, you know. But I can tell you that about a year and a half after I joined the movement, I started to realized that a lot of these people really weren't having interest in having conversations. They just wanted to spread their anarchist ideology, and that was it. As soon as I started asking questions and you know, trying to have these conversations by playing devil's advocate, That's when I found myself that they would call me a capitalist pig, that I didn't know what I was talking about. You know, they would ostracize me. And that really made me want to go look at the other side. And I did. I started college soon after. And there's where I found a lot of conservative students who I just befriended. I was seeking them out in order for me to like learn more about them, learn more about their ideology. And slowly and surely, I started changing my mind, changing my what I believed. Now, the second event. This is a little gross, but I'll keep it PG. I was at an event with a lot of my friends, and there was an outdoor like show. The bands were playing, you know, like people were drinking. There was a corner where people were peeing. That was kind of like a thing. Anyways, so there was a couple who were having sex in that pee corner once, and then everybody was kind of just snickering about it. But then the owner of the house, who was a gang-affiliated fellow, he came over and he kicked them from behind. And I remember one of my friends went over and I started trying to like stop the situation, you know, like de-escalate. And I ran over to my friend and I pulled him and I was like, you do not want to get involved. You don't know these people and you are about to get beat up because let's get out. Like, we don't want to be here. But then I looked at the couple who were having sex and well, they were my friends too. And now I'm stuck with this. So, we ended up getting into this huge brawl and, you know, we had the police, the canine unit, the gang unit, and the helicopter circling around. And, you know, all my friends were beat up. Like, there was somebody, like, profoundly bleeding from their head. It was very gruesome. And I thought to myself, why in the world am I hanging out with these people? I don't even believe necessarily what they do anymore. But, like, this is not the life that I want for myself. So that's when I decided to completely cut ties with these people.
I'm going to tell you another brief story that you might not know, Gabriel. You know, Chief Justice Clarence Thomas is in the news all the time. He's very hated by the left. Part of his own story was that he became a radical in the 60s, maybe the early 70s. I had long hair, an afro, and became pretty radical. And actually one night on a college campus, some sort of violence broke out. I don't know the details of that. But he went away from that thinking, what am I doing? And that was the genesis of his complete change and his move toward conservatism. I just thought you'd find that interesting. But all right, so let me just tell people, I have to ask you one more thing about Antifa. Our FBI director tells us that Antifa is it's just an idea. It's not an organization, it's just an idea. I'd love to know your response to that.
Oh, it's certainly not just an idea. I mean, the way I describe people is the best way to understand Antifa is not as an organization, but as a movement. And within this movement, you have several different radical left-wing groups, factions, and individuals who are working to affect this ideology. The way to understand Antifa is not as a noun, but as a verb. It is a call to action. It's a call to arms. So there can be a lot of anarchist groups or like just individuals who go and commit the Antifa, the anti-fascist. It's not just Antifa. It's called anti-fascist action. That's the full name of it. You know, you actually doing something about it. It's not just like a group. There's a lot of groups that don't even call themselves Antifa. You do have some of them like Rose City Antifa, but you also have in Berkeley like By Any Means Necessary, Las Cruces United Against Racism over in New Mexico. You know, you don't have to call yourself Antifa to be part of the anti-fascist movement because Antifa is an action, not a noun.
All right, and just to be clear to people listening, that we are the Americans in the capitalistic state, we are the fascists to the Antifa movement. And so, all right, so you have made such a change, Gabriel. I kind of think, you know, I wish we could just talk forever about all the incremental things that happened. But Our America, I was looking at your website. You guys are doing some incredible things. And we're going to get to college campuses in just a second. But in general, you're fighting for free speech and on behalf of policemen. Did I get that right?
Yeah, so Our America is a great organization. You know, I'm national director there, and we are all about uniting Americans, not as Democrats or Republicans, but as Americans advocating for Our America. Some of the issues we talk about is crime and safety, as you mentioned, because the majority of Americans support the police. They want to fully fund them. But we also want to punish criminals who are repeat and violent offenders, making sure that they stay behind bars. At the same time, if anybody wants to come out of that lifestyle, that they have opportunities to really turn their lives around. We also believe in free speech. As a free speech advocate, I mean, that's the issue that I'm really passionate about, freedom of religion, and also ensuring that the government stays away from the economy to combat inflation, because that's a big deal. You know, and I mean, we are doing quite a little bit, a few different events over in Arizona and in Georgia, and we're expanding rapidly.
Yeah. Well, is this for anyone, or is this for younger people?
Oh, I mean, this is for everybody. So one of the great things about Our America is that, you know, we are we want to start chapters all throughout the country where people can go in and be active locally, but also with a national emphasis. As I mentioned, we're active in Arizona as well as in Georgia. And, you know, we're looking to expand to other states just to make sure that people can really get involved in changing policy as well as supporting good causes.
Yeah, I was very impressed with your information. So is it ouramerica.org?
Yeah, joinouramerica.org. That's joinouramerica.org.
Okay, very good. All right. Now, what is the intersection between you, your organization, Our America, and what's happening on college campuses right now everywhere? All this violence, this pro-Hamas fighting. What's your connection with that?
Oh, wow. So, I mean, there's just a lot of, it's insane because a lot of people keep saying, having the wrong take. There is a lot of people out there who are trying to fight anti-Semitism with censorship. I mean, there was a bill that was introduced in the House a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week. It's called the Columbia Act, for example. And this would create anti-Semitism censors or monitors on college campuses to monitor anti-Semitic speech. And then that way they could be prosecuted or punished, disciplined by the administration and the university. Well, one of the problems is that conservatives should know that these are not new. They've been used against conservatives time and time again. They're called biased reporting systems. Actually, there's a great organization that is called Speech First that's been reporting about them for about almost 10 years now. And what happens is that if you feel that there's somebody speaking out in anything that offends you, that there's bias, you would submit a report, and then this administration, they would investigate it. And a lot of times they would say, okay, there's no fraud, there's nothing wrong here, go ahead. But it's the punishment in the investigation, because these students were subjected to a long investigation, and they were threatened they were violating their privacy and threatened to really suspend them or, you know, kick them out of school with little to no evidence. So some of these issues are something that Our America opposes. You know, we oppose third party monitoring systems that police speech, because they only work to censor good ideas as opposed to actually combating bad ones.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree with you on this, Gabriel. I think you're talking about the bill that was passed on Wednesday by the House to combat anti-Semitism. That's the one, right?
Actually, there's a couple of them. A couple of them. The one I'm referencing is called the Columbia Act. This bill does something similar, but it's not college-based. This is more of like broadly. It redefines what it means to be anti-Semitic. But not only does it define the definition, but it also empowers local governments to act against people who use that type of language. Which it's not a good bill. It is.
No.
It's unconstitutional. It's going to be challenged, and it's going to be overturned.
Well, I hope so. And actually, when you and I finish talking, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. It passed 320-91, and most people would say, well, why wouldn't everyone vote on behalf of an anti-Semitism bill? But it's not what it appears to be, and Gabriel's right, that it's a big, huge red flag. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. I want to talk to you about what's happening on campuses. Now, you can't be everywhere. But you guys have kind of an intersection with the protesters at Emory University, as I understand. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, so at Emory University, it's over in Georgia. One of the things that we've been seeing, not just at Emory, but specifically in Emory, that there's been a lot of outside agitators who are going into these protests, and they're using it for their own gains. Sure, they may support what the student protesters are doing, but they're creating chaos and they're making things worse for everybody. I mean, you mentioned that story of that woman the 63-year-old woman in Columbia University. Well, at Emory, one of the issues that we're advocating for is actually, let me take a step back. in Atlanta, there is a training facility that's going to be built, and for police officers, for first responders, and for, you know, making sure that everybody is ready and trained. Well, you have anarchist groups there that are trying to stop it. In fact, last year there was a shootout between the anarchists and police officers, the activists who were trying to stop the construction of this. You know, it's actually pretty bad. So at Emory University, some of these same anarchists used the Palestinian or like the Hamas protests in order to basically set up their encampment, become part of the encampment. So some of the people who are being arrested at Emory University were these same anarchists who were saying, let's stop Cop City. And, you know, there's a lot of collaboration when you're looking at all the far left groups that they really need to be stopped. You know, one thing that I always tell people when it comes to these protests is that you have to protect the speech, but you have to arrest the agitators. Otherwise, no one's going to have free speech.
Well, that's true. And the irony is to me, Gabriel, that, what, 2 years ago, three, four, pick a year, the colleges and universities were setting up free speech zones. You could say what you wanted to in this little circle, you know, 10 blocks from campus. I'm exaggerating, but something like that. And they told us that speech is violence.
You're completely not exaggerating. Like, I've seen them the size of a picnic table. They're tiny sometimes.
Yeah. And then they tell us, they've told us that speech is violence. Speech is violence. And if you don't use the proper pronouns, that's violent too. And so your feelings, I can't remember the phrase for the feelings, but it's so ironic to me, Gabriel, that now you've got pro-Hamas supporters screaming death to the Jews. I've got a clip that I'm not going to stop and play right now, but it's happening all over where they're screaming. I've heard some of them chanting that October the 7th, we're going to repeat that day. Every day is going to be October 7th for you, screaming at the Jewish students on these campuses. So what happened to free speech and speech is violence? What happened to that?
So you have to understand the way a lot of these movements see themselves. They always see it under the construction or like the structure of the good versus evil, of the oppressed versus the oppressor. They're always the oppressed. And as the oppressed, they must do anything and everything possible to fight against the evil oppressors. And when you see this in good versus evil, you begin to ignore the bad things because your side can do no wrong. Meanwhile, the other side can do no right. And when you start seeing things in good versus evil, that's when you start allowing violence. You start being very hypocritical because you don't actually stand for any good principles. You just stand against opposition to anybody who disagrees with you. That's really what they're saying. They don't see themselves as hypocritical. They see their actions as being justified, not because of free speech principles, because good voices are being silenced, because they're more than happy to silence voices that they consider to be not good.
So you just described, you know, one of the hallmark methods and objectives of communism. They always, there's an oppressor and an oppressed. In Russia, it was the peasants versus, you know, the white Russians, the establishment Russians. And in China, it was the peasants versus the business owners. In America, it's white versus black or what other color. And they always have to put people against each other. So that brings me to this. You know, many of us describe what's happening on these campuses as, and I'm sure you've heard this, or if you haven't, I guess I'm telling you something you don't know, but we call it the red-green axis, A-X-I-S, the red-green axis, because it's a mixture of communism, and then the green is the pro-Islamist irrational movement working together in these campuses. Do you see it that way or not?
No, I mean, as I mentioned, this is not unique to these Palestinian protesters, nor is it unique to Antifa. This is a tactic that's been used by communists and by many other far-left movements. I can't think of any other non-well-meaning organization from the far-left that has not used this. Even though some of those, like, organizations that are not necessarily using violence, they still see themselves as, like, the ultimate good versus the ultimate evil.
Yeah. What do you think is the solution? I mean, I have my ideas, but I'm just curious. What do you think from your vantage point?
Well, I mean, a lot of these issues are very complex. But when it comes to the college campuses, I think it's a very simple situation, actually. I actually like a lot of what the University of Florida did. So what they did is they very clearly laid out, first of all, they stood for free speech. They said, you have every single right to support free speech or to engage in free speech. Great. But then they also outlined very directly what is free speech and what is not. What isn't considered free speech? Breaking into a building, barricading yourself in said building, breaking windows, assaulting people. You know, some of these things that are not free speech. They very clearly defined it. And they said, if you commit any of the acts that are not protected by the First Amendment, we are going to arrest you. You're going to be suspended or expelled. And then what did they do? They actually did it. And I mean, eventually, that's what that Columbia University eventually did almost a week later. And, you know, they were able to stop the protest. And, you know, it was actually very, very heartwarming to see that the president of Columbia University grabbed the Palestinian flag and threw it on the floor, and then he, while also upholding the American flag. And also, just last night, they did the same thing at UCLA. This is what you have to do. You have to protect free speech and arrest the agitators.
I agree. Yes, I do. And we're going to tell some more stories. I know even on Yale... Yale was, I know this from an insider, that they sent out this notice for this big protest to take place in a certain place. And about 5 seconds after that went out, the administration sent out one and said, if you participate in any way out the bounds of free speech, you will be suspended, you will lose your tuition for the year, and I forgot what else they said. So nobody showed up. It was very interesting, Gabriel. Yeah. No one showed up to that protest. So there are ways. It's just it's a matter of discipline, just like parents with their children. And this country, we've been through this before. We've been through this before. The anarchists, the people that wanted to violently overthrow the United States, nearly did so in the 70s. And then they went undercover and shaved. And they're probably, one of them is that 62-year-old lady in Columbia, and so they just came back to become professors and to poison people like you. And thank God they were not successful. Is there anything else you want to add, Gabriel, before I say goodbye to you?
Of course. I mean, if people want to check out the work that we're doing, people can go to joinouramerica.org. That's joinouramerica.org. Or they can follow me on Twitter at OG Nadales.
At what now? Say that again.
OG Nadales, which is my last name.
Okay. All right, good. We'll put that on our Facebook page so people can reach you. Gabriel, it's been a delight. Thank you. And thank you
thank
for everything
you.
You're doing. Yeah,
okay.
You encourage us.
Of course, thank you.
You encourage us. Okay, God bless you, thank Gabriel. You. Bye-bye.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7 back with you. You know, the Bible says in Galatians, beautiful verse, and let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. You know, that applies to all kinds of things. And in this moment, I'm thinking of those of you who are thinking that babies' lives are as precious as I do, and moms too. I think the lives of the women are just as important. They're so damaged themselves by abortion, and that's why Preborn is an organization that I think is just doing things right. They provide ultrasounds to moms who are confused about what they want to do, or maybe even set on getting abortions. When they see their babies, they're not so set. And more than half of them decide to keep them when they see that. If you have been giving, could I just encourage you to continue to do that? Because you are saving lives. Amazingly, we are saving lives together. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. That was my disabled daughter. I talk about I Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com.
I have read and I have been questioned since I've been here about certain demonstrations against my coming. And I would like to say just one thing, and to those who demonstrate so. I wonder if they have ever asked themselves that if they should have the kind of government they apparently seek, no one would ever be able to do what they're doing again.
Anything, and I have a feeling that if you check closely on some of the more militant of those leaders who are advocating violence, you'll find that if you settle whatever issue it is that has them worked up today, they'll be back tomorrow morning with another issue. But I think the time has come for them to make a choice and to decide whether they want to continue to even tolerate these false prophets in their midst who are, if anything, destroying their own community.
I don't think that taking to the streets and rioting and disorder has ever solved anything or ever will.
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us. All who oppose them are indicted as warmongers. They say we offer simple answers to complex problems. Well, perhaps there is a simple answer. Not an easy answer, but simple. If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right, we cannot buy our security, our freedom from the threat of the bomb, by committing an immorality so great as saying to a billion human beings now enslaved behind the Iron Curtain, give up your dreams of freedom, because to save our own skins, we're willing to make a deal with your slave masters.
That was the President, Ronald Reagan, and that's why we loved him so much. You know, some things never change. Principles never change. Men, the nature of mankind, never changes. So even though he was president in the 1980s, here we go again. I've asked Bruce to join me, former FBI agent, former prosecutor in Cook County, and my sweetheart. So, honey, you've been listening, and you listened to Gabriel's interview. Just want to know what your thoughts are.
Well, in regards to Reagan, I think we have to remember he was the governor of California during the protests that were going on during the 60s. And instead of running away from it, he stood there directly and said, we are not going to let you people, the students, run our institutions. You can have your say. You can have your say peacefully. But when it crosses into violence, then we're going to stop it. And as he said, that is a simple, not an easy, but a simple solution to stop these things. And I think we've seen in these protests the different methods that were used by various universities to try and deal with these protests that are going on. And I would say 100% when the universities set the rules and enforce them like they did at the University of Florida, the protests end well, you know, everyone's okay. But when the rules are quote-unquote laid out like at Columbia and then not enforced and the bad people are just allowed to do whatever they want with no repercussions, they end badly.
Yeah, you know, on Florida, Bruce, you and I just heard yesterday that Governor Ron DeSantis has directed the state's universities in Florida to make it easier for out-of-state students facing anti-Semitism and other religious harassment in the wake of the Israel-Hamas war to transfer to Florida campuses.
Governor DeSantis is always on the cutting edge of things.
He really is. He's just amazing.
You know, I think going to some of what Gabriel said, we have to understand that there's a narrative going on here, just as there always is when there's an issue like this. And a narrative being pushed by the Palestinians
is that these are students and they have been wronged and their people have been wronged, and therefore they are allowed to do these protests and to be violent because they have been wronged. However, if you listen to Gabriel, many, many of these people at these protests are not students. They are professional protesters. And you can insert any issue you want. This week, it has been Palestine. Next week, it will be LGBTQ issues. The week after that, it will be trans issues. The week after that, it might be racism. These people are paid protesters to try and overthrow our government.
Yeah, they want chaos so they can overthrow. And that's why it's the red-green axis. It's like the old, what's that old war guru, Japanese, who says that the enemy of my enemies is my friend.
That's right.
They are friends right now. Now, if they prevail in overthrowing the United States, they'll turn on each other with a vengeance. And neither is going to want to give quarter because the communists want to rule the world, and so do the Islamists. So it's a bit of a problem.
It's like the Soviets and the Germans before World War II, they signed a non-aggression pact with each other. And that served their needs as they carved up Poland and some of the countries. But then when they ran out of things to do under that non-aggression pact, then the Nazis turned on the Soviets and invaded Russia. And that is what you'll see here. Speaking of Gabriel, I thought one of the most poignant things is to listen to how he evolved into an Antifa member. And you look at the brainwashing that's going on in our schools. You know, we've talked about this before, and I think people kind of, roll their eyes like, they're not brainwashing people. But listen to Gabriel's words when he came here from Mexico, and I'm sure they thought they had been rescued. Wow, we're going to America. This is going to be great. Then he gets into public schools and is proselytized by these communists that America is an unfair place. America is not what you think it is. We should overthrow the government to make it what it should be. And the next thing you know, he's gone from an idealistic immigrant, I'm going to a better place, to I hate this place where I've ended up.
Exactly. It really was stunning. And you know what? The thing of it is we know that's happening, but he's a real-life example, and because of his background in Mexico, it makes it even more dramatic.
Yeah. I think when he talked about the concept of good versus evil, that really does help us to understand the mindset of the left. A lot of this stuff to us on its face doesn't make sense. But when you agitate people and you identify an enemy, we always jump on somebody that's, an easy target, I guess you'd say. And when you talk about, I always think about President Trump. He has been demonized by the press and by so many people that now I think this coming election, the fraud that will be committed in this upcoming election will be massive, and the people that are committing the fraud will feel justified because Donald Trump has been made into the enemy. And if you do something to fight the enemy in these people's minds, it's justified. Just the way Gabriel talked about how Antifa stirs their members up to believe that whatever they're protesting against is an enemy, and that this is good versus evil. This is not just an issue. It's actually, remember he talked about the ultimate good versus the ultimate evil.
Yeah.
And when you're in that mindset, you will do things that you wouldn't do normally.
Yes, just like going to war. If you thought you were in a righteous cause, like our farm boys who went over and fought the Nazis, ended up killing people and having to do things they would never in their natural life have done. But it is that, but it's just a twisting of what's true and what's good and what is evil. There's one more subject I want to talk about before we go, Bruce, because this is very important and that people understand. Gabriel touched on this, but I want to play a clip too. This is a report from KVUE on the anti-Semitism bill just passed by the House. Let's listen.
Overnight, the U.S. House passed a bill, 320-91, and a group of representatives say they want to protect their Jewish constituents. And the bill would essentially make it easier for the Department of Education to enforce anti-discrimination laws at public institutions.
So this bill would require the Department of Education to use the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism.
Well, the alliance has a short version of the definition, but also created a list of examples that's included in the new bill.
Part of the full expanded definition reads, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination by claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor. Many of the Republicans and Democrats said adding this type of regulation infringes on free speech, including Republican Congressman from Austin, Chip Roy.
Criminal behavior is criminal behavior. Violating people's civil rights is violating people's civil rights. But when we want to insert the government into what you're thinking and what motivates you, you are empowering that which should never be empowered. The ability of the government to police thought.
Chip is right. Congressman Chip Roy is right. Sandy Rios back with you. Bruce, basically this... This Holocaust group defines anti-Semitism in a particular way, and it's, of course, about things that we can all agree on, the perception of Jews, which could be expressed by hatred, in hatred as of Jews. But rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism include such things as calling for the killing or harming of Jews or holding Jews collectively responsible for actions taken by Israel. But it also included, which is not in the article I'm reading you, the phrase that the Jews killed Jesus. Now, that's a simplified phrase, but we all understand what happened at the crucifixion, that the Jews did insist on the crucifixion of Jesus, even though they couldn't carry out the crucifixion themselves. They didn't have the power. But it's also true that the Jews were the ones who supported Jesus. So it's not cut and dried, except that you cannot have a law that says that embraces that definition and includes that phrase. I wish the phrase were exactly there, but if this the Department of Education is going to enforce us on in schools and college campuses, it doesn't take much imagination to see where this is going. And that's why Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I'm not sure else, but voted against that because they felt it's very dangerous. And Chip was right. This is like passing hate crime bills. And he said, you know, hate is hate. Hate is hate. It doesn't have to be defined as something. Murder of a person is murder. It doesn't matter what color. If you have prejudice in your heart, if you murder someone, you hate them anyway. So there's no worse hate. Hate that leads to murder is hate. So this is the same thing here. And it's a dangerous tool that the House just handed, 320-91. Honey, what do you think about that?
I absolutely agree with you. We already have statutes on the books that handle these types of situations. Hate speech, when it's defined specifically, becomes very, it's a slippery slope.
It's a tool.
Because you know what will happen now is this law will be passed. To me, this is a show vote.
Yes.
It's like,
but
to
dangerous.
Show your Jewish constituents that you are concerned about them. The problem is this is unnecessary and will actually hurt them. Because where this will evolve, if history repeats itself, is this will now be used regarding other groups.
Oh, Christians specifically.
So Christians, yeah. You name it. If you, they'll start legislating like you cannot use certain words, and like say against a gay group, if you say that's immoral, are they going to codify that you cannot call someone who's gay immoral?
Well, they will. In this particular bill, it just deals with the Jews and anti-Semitism. But you know the drill, and you know that's what it's going to be expanded to. And the Congress just passed it, 320-91. And
you know, I as a former prosecutor, I can tell you there are multiple laws on the books that cover almost all these situations, and they don't need to be delineated this specifically. If you threaten a Jewish person with violence, there already are laws against domestic terrorism and against threatening people. It doesn't matter. You don't need to include that they're Jewish. I understand that people want to try to do something about this, but I think this, in the long run, is not the way to do it.
It's a show vote. It's a show vote that's very damaging. Okay. Well, I want to play one last thing. This would be, we're going to end with President Ronald Reagan. His last part, well, we're going to put that whole montage that I played earlier with Reagan. It was produced by Daily Caller. We'll put that on our Facebook page so you can watch it and enjoy. It's really pretty powerful. Let's close today with the third part of Ronald Reagan's discussion about what's happening on college campuses.
Recently, in some places in the nation, there's been a disturbing reoccurrence of bigotry and violence. If I may, from the platform of this organization, known for its tolerance, I would like to address a few remarks to those groups who still adhere to senseless racism and religious prejudice. To those individuals who persist in such hateful behavior, if I were speaking to them instead of to you, I would say to them, you are the ones who are out of step with our society. You are the ones who willfully violate the meaning of the dream that is America. And this country, because of such what it stands for, will not stand for your conduct.
There are cities in Michigan. Shut up.
All right, that was President Ronald Reagan making his point. And this has been Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.